Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, everybody? You're gonna have to forgive me. I look like I literally look like Phantom of the Opera right now. So one of the lights blew here in the studio this morning, and I don't have a replacement. And we'll be in the new studio on Monday anyway, so I mean it doesn't matter much, but it looks funny. Like half my face is just a shadow and the other half. Anyway, you'll see it later on YouTube. I don't know why I'm bothering to even give you this this prelude here. But a lot of stuff to get to today for the final show in the old studio. I told you guys yesterday, but the inspection is going to be going on mid-show here, 11:30 Eastern time. My contractor's over at the new studio, and he's going to handle everything. So fingers crossed. Hopefully everything goes well. For today, I have a cringe-inducing story about how the Democrats are planning on moving forward and how they plan on reinvigorating the left for the next election. And it is the exact wrong strategy. I couldn't have – if I was joking around trying to create a worse strategy, I couldn't have. So it is a disaster, and I can't wait to share that with you. All right, so we got that we'll talk about. We also have Harry Reid sat down with Chris Hayes of MSNBC and explained why he thinks Hillary Clinton lost, and he's dead wrong. We have a poll from Newsweek here about what the American people want President Trump to work on, and you're going to be surprised when you hear what's top of the list. So I got all that stuff and much more. Let's go ahead and jump into it. And I'm going to start with the exact wrong strategy from the Democrats and how it looks like we might have to get ready for 8 years of Donald Trump, because that's how bad this strategy is. All right, let me set it up for you. There's a cringe-inducing story in Politico about what some Democratic elites are planning on doing moving forward. So they got their asses handed to them in the last election, obviously, and they don't know what the proper path is from here on out. I mean, people on the left, like myself, we've been screaming, hey, how about you actually act progressive? But they've kind of universally rejected that because they're establishment Democrat shills and they can't wait to bend over for corporate America. And now it appears like they've literally worked that into their strategy. Well, not literally. Nobody's actually taking it up the ass. But they've worked that into their strategy. So they explain here, Hillary Clinton's attack dog, David Brock, is launching his own Koch brothers-like donor network to finance attacks on President-elect Donald Trump and to rebuild the political left after Trump's stunning victory over Clinton last week. Brock, on Thursday night, emailed more than 200 of the biggest donors on the left, including finance titans George Soros, Tom Steyer, and Donald Sussman, inviting them to a retreat in Palm Beach over inauguration weekend to assess what Democrats did wrong in 2016, figure out how to correct it, and raise cash for those initiatives. And then this is what David Brock said, quote, This will be the gathering for Democratic donors from across the country to hear from a broad and diverse group of leaders about the next step for progressives under a Trump administration, Brock wrote to the donors in an email obtained by Politico. Okay, so, in other words, let me break this down as simple as possible. You would think that the Democrats, after getting their ass handed to them by Donald Trump, that they would go, you know, maybe we should rethink our strategy and maybe we shouldn't be massively corporate and care about catering to billionaires, and maybe we shouldn't be more right-wing. Maybe the answer is to move away from the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party and move more towards the Bernie Sanders wing. But no. Now we know, because of this report in Politico, they're doubling down on the strategy of corporatism. They're doubling down on the strategy of selling out to billionaires. So they have a retreat plan. David Brock, who's just a partisan Democratic hack, he's not a progressive, he's not a liberal, he's a Democratic hack, he's Hillary Clinton's attack dog, that's what they call him. This is the guy who runs Media Matters. He's getting together with George Soros and Tom Steyer and a bunch of other billionaires, and they're like, okay, now we need to figure out how we can get more money into the Democratic Party to try to, you know, crush Donald Trump and rip his face off. No, 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 no. But see, that's the problem. You're doing it right now. The fact that you're in a room where the public isn't allowed talking to a bunch of billionaires as to how to move forward, that's the problem. That's the problem right there, is that the American people look at the Democrats and they go, oh, Hillary Clinton ran her campaign on being an insider and continuing the status quo, and that's what we don't like. And this guy's saying, well, yeah, no, that's the strategy moving forward, is I can't wait to get with the billionaires and talk to them about how we can beat Donald Trump. Step number one should be get away from the billionaires. No, don't take any money from billionaires. Don't take any money from corporations. Don't have any super PACs. Have an entire party that's principled and that shouts it from the mountaintops. It's amazing they still haven't grasped that this is the way forward. Like, that's all you have to do. All you have to do is go out there and say, look, understand something. Donald Trump may have talked a populist game, but he's lying to you. Look at his transition team. It's full of Wall Street people and lobbyists, and it's an absolute disaster. How about you turn to us, the Democrats, and we're going to make a pact with you right now. We don't take any more money from Wall Street. We don't take any more money from billionaires. We don't take any more money from corporations. We're a party of the people. So now we're going to do Bernie Sanders style, $27 at a time. That's how we're going to do it. If the Democrats came out and said that and they stuck to it, they would landslide the Republicans in the next election. You know, not to mention all the other things they could hammer them on, which they don't, which are the things that the American people agree with them on and disagree with the Republicans on, raising the minimum wage, getting a universal health care system, raising taxes on the rich, all these different things. I mean, the Democrats have positions that are more liked by the American people, universal background checks for gun purchases. So if you hammer away on those things and you make a pact with the American people, we're done with the billionaires, then you win. But no, David Brock, in his infinite stupidity, because he's apparently incapable of learning a lesson, he goes, I know what the problem was. Hillary Clinton didn't raise enough money from the billionaires. So let me get in a room with more billionaires and raise more money. No, but that wasn't the problem. She outraised Donald Trump massively. So that couldn't have been the issue. But they're doubling down on the wrong strategy, man. It's unbelievable. What will it take? What will it take for them to learn? Well, I'm not going to sit around and wait for them to learn. You know, we have to take back the party. Actual liberals have to take back the party. People who care about the issues and who care about the corruption in Washington. It's our job to take back the party. And we need to fight, and we need to let them know there's no more room in the party for the Hillary Clinton wing. The Hillary Clinton wing is the demise of the party. I mean, she voted for the Iraq War. She voted for the Patriot Act. Her husband signed NAFTA. She supported NAFTA. She supported deregulation of Wall Street. She is an ultimate corrupt insider, giving speeches to Goldman Sachs for hundreds of thousands of dollars. This is why she lost. And yet David Brock, her attack dog, is like, where's George Soros? I need a bigger check, because that's definitely the trick to beating Donald Trump. No, the trick to beating Donald Trump is to not have George Soros in the room. The trick to beating Donald Trump is to not, talk to these billionaires. Now, by the way, don't get me wrong. So when it comes to, like, Tom Steyer, for example, he's actually a great guy. He's a billionaire. He's a liberal, and he's a great guy. I mean, he cares deeply about climate change. He's been lobbying to try to get the government to act on climate change. But he's one dude. He doesn't stand a chance against the, you know, the money that's pumped into our political system by ExxonMobil. So I have nothing against Tom Steyer. He's a lovely fellow. But bottom line is, you have to stand on principle sometimes. And the principle is, sorry, we don't take billionaire money. We don't take corporate money. We don't have super PACs. We raise from the people. And by the way, if you tell this to Tom Steyer, he'd probably go, you know what, you're right. That's what we should do moving forward. So sorry, I guess I'm not giving any more to political causes. That's correct. So, and lest people say, oh, come on, you're just, you know, make guaranteeing that Republicans can win. That's not true at all. Because think about it. If we play the game of trying to raise money and that's the way we win our elections, well, we're fucked in the long run because the Republicans have a track record, with the exception, notable exception of this election, the Republicans have a track record of raising more money. So they are bigger and better sellouts by and large. So you're buying into a system where the Democrats are guaranteed to come in second almost every time. Again, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump being the exception, but by and large, especially in the Senate races, especially in the House races, the Republicans sell out way more than the Democrats. They're more the pro-business party. So they can raise more money, the Democrats raise less money, and you're at a permanent disadvantage if you buy into the system of money in politics. So we have to fight to get the money out of the system. But in the meantime, while there's still money in the system, take a pledge to not raise it from corporations and billionaires and not have super PACs and scream it from the fucking mountaintops. And that's your strategy. We're the party of the people. We're the party of working families. But no, David Brock wants to make it we're the party of George Soros, and I can't wait to get in a smoke-filled back room with a bunch of billionaires to figure out how to take Trump down because that doesn't look suspect. No, of course it does. In fact, you're proving his narrative when you do that. Trump's narrative being, yeah, I'm the big guy against the establishment, and I'm the billionaire for the people, and, you know, everybody's plotting against me, the establishment. And then David Brock goes, that's right, George Soros, let's go in a smoke-filled back room. They never fucking learn. We're going to make them learn. All right, now we go to Harry Reid, and let's talk a little bit about fucking Harry Reid, man. What are you doing? Harry Reid sat down with Chris Hayes. Let me set this up for you. This is a sad segment because this shows you the thinking that the Democrats are currently engaging in. Harry Reid sat down with Chris Hayes of MSNBC, and he explains why he thinks Hillary lost, and it's sad.
The Clinton campaign not paying enough attention to rural America. You know, it's easy to second guess what Hillary did. I love Hillary Clinton. I'm sorry she lost. I did everything I could to help. And, you know, I could go through a litany of things. There's no question in my mind. She would have won this election without any problem if Comey had not been the Republican operative that he is. For example,
those are strong words, Senator.
But I believe it. He came out against what the Attorney General had recommended, against what common sense dictates. He is the reason she lost the elections. So you want one reason? That's it. Comey, he can be fat and happy in his office there for 7 more years after having thrown an election to Donald Trump. And if he feels good about that, that's nice.
They have to stop with this absurd myth. This is just as stupid as the Republicans who said after the 2012 election, oh, the reason why Obama won is because him and Chris Christie hugged each other after Hurricane Sandy when Obama went to New Jersey. You remember that? All the people on the right were blaming the election loss on Chris Christie because when Obama got off the plane, they hugged. And they said, oh my goodness, this makes Obama look like a great bipartisan president who cares about the people, who shows up after a terrible hurricane and a disaster. And that's why, I'm telling you, that's why Romney lost, is because fucking Chris Christie stabbed him in the back. Now, everybody on the left, when that narrative came out, we laughed. We're like, are you fucking kidding me? Mitt Romney lost because he's Mitt Romney. He's deeply unlikable. He's not trustworthy. He's a corporate robot. He sounds like he's never said a sincere thing in his entire life. He ran a bad campaign. That's why he lost. Well, now the Democrats are doing the same fucking thing. Oh, you know, Comey and the email scandal, I mean, that's the issue. So for those of you who didn't follow the timeline here, let me explain to you why this is utter bullshit. So what was it, like 2 weeks before the election, you had James Comey come out and say, oh, well, we have more Hillary Clinton emails that may or may not be new, but we're looking into them because we found them in relation to an unrelated case. It was Anthony Weiner and the fact that he's fucking sexting like 92% of the planet. So they were looking through his emails. They found Huma's emails and Huma's emails with Hillary Clinton, and they wanted to go through it again. Oh, let's make sure we didn't miss any emails. So they did this big announcement, or, you know, he wrote a letter, and then it got out in the media, and everybody said, oh, they reopened the case. Well, fast forward. It was like 2 or 3 days before the election, Comey came out again and said, oh, yeah, there's nothing here. She's cleared. Now, why does fucking Harry Reid and every other partisan hack Democrat leave that out? They leave it out because it doesn't fit the narrative. Now, not only did Comey clear Hillary again a few days before the election, there was a bump in the polls for her. It was a tangible bump. I remember the morning of the election going, oh, look at that. Her poll numbers bounced back up. So she was up like 2 points, and then Comey said, oh, she's cleared. Bounced back up, and she was up about 4 points on average. So if anything, the argument is in the other direction, that James Comey, at the end, helped her by clearing her again. And the Republicans were furious. And if Donald Trump had lost, they would have blamed it on that. Like, oh, okay, yeah, the problem is that Comey cleared her. If Comey didn't clear her 2 days before the election, well then, you know, Trump would have won. That's what they would have said. But Harry Reid, they just leave out, all these hack Democrats just leave out that Comey cleared her again. There was a bump in the polls again, but they go, no, the problem is that a few weeks before the election, they said again about the emails. Hillary Clinton lost because she's Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is the quintessential insider. She is the epitome of the establishment. She even argued America's already great. You know, I'm going to keep us on the same path. I'm going to continue Obama's legacy. Now, look, behind the scenes, I guess there was an argument to make there because Obama had a 58% approval rating. He still has a super high approval rating. So they looked at that, and they made a calculation, and they said, you know what, let's just go with that argument. But what they're missing is, so, yes, people like Obama, and yes, Obama's done a bunch of good things, and yes, the unemployment rate is much lower than it was when Bush took office, and he stabilized everything. That's all true. But poverty is rising, middle-class wages are stagnant, higher-paying jobs were replaced with lower-paying jobs. This crisis of globalization and neoliberalism has made it so people feel hopeless. You know, NAFTA and the trade deal shipping out these middle-class jobs. And she didn't understand the anger because she's not – that's not her world. She doesn't live in a town in Ohio that was decimated by these trade deals that ship jobs overseas. So she was disconnected from it. So she lost because she couldn't tap into that, because she is aloof, and she is a part of the Washington insider circle. So they don't understand that, and Harry Reid certainly doesn't wrap his mind around this, that people didn't like Hillary Clinton because she voted for the Iraq War, she voted for the Patriot Act, her husband signed NAFTA, she supported NAFTA, she supported TPP and pushed for it 45 times before she came out against it. She supported deregulation of Wall Street. She took hundreds of thousands of dollars from, you know, Goldman Sachs and other financial firms, and of course she's going to return the favor. The Clinton Foundation, people laughed at the idea of the Clinton Foundation being a scandal. Ha, 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 that's hilarious. They do some good work in some places around the world. Yes, but you're fucking dodging the point that people are making. People aren't saying the Clinton Foundation does no good. People are saying, hey, is there pay-to-play corruption going on? So, yes, there's no denying that if you get $1 million influx into your charity, you can do some good work. Where did that $1 million come from? Oh, look at that. It came from Qatar, a country that treats women like second-class citizens. Oh, look, millions of dollars came from Saudi Arabia. They say all atheists are terrorists. They don't let women drive cars. They behead people in the square, the public square for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling. They bomb people to smithereens, civilians in Yemen. So, yes, oh, the money did some good, but what happens in return? Well, turns out Bill Clinton got money and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton approved weapons deals for them, gave them weapons that they then turned around and used to kill civilians. This is why people don't like Hillary Clinton. because they know she's cutting some gross backroom deals. They know she's corrupt. They know she's an insider. But, of course, to make themselves feel better, what do the establishment Democrats do? It's all deflection. Deflection and rationalization. It can't be Hillary Clinton's fault that she lost the election. It can't be her wing of the party's fault, the establishment Democrats, that wing of the party's fault that she lost the election. It must be the Bernie bros' fault. It must be everybody on Trump's side is a racist and a sexist and a xenophobe and a bigot. It must be James Comey. It must be anything, media, anything and everything. Blame anything and everything but her. Well, look, Harry, I'm here to tell you, it is her fault. She was a bad candidate. She had higher untrustworthy numbers than Donald Trump. Donald Trump, a guy who went bankrupt 6 times as he campaigned on being a great businessman. People said that guy is more trustworthy than Hillary fucking Clinton. Again, whose fault is that? You were given a fucking gift in this hilarious candidate with 63% unfavorable ratings. And you couldn't win. You couldn't win. I mean, what does that say about her? That says a lot about her, and you're unwilling to look in the mirror and acknowledge it. You're just shoving your head in the sand, and you want to go right back to doing the terrible things you were doing before. And I'm not saying this because I hate these people. I'm saying this because I care about the future of the Democratic Party and the country. So if the Democratic Party doesn't get their act together, then what's going to happen? We already have Republicans controlling a majority of state legislatures, a majority of governorships, a majority in the House of Representatives, a majority in the Senate, and the presidency. They control everything. The Democratic Party doesn't get their act together, they're going to run roughshod. They're already going to run roughshod. And you made that bed, and now you're sleeping in it, and you're refusing to acknowledge the role that you played and the establishment Democrats played in creating this monster that is Donald Trump. It's really pathetic to watch. Stop blaming James Comey. Look in the goddamn mirror, because that's where the real problem is. Okay. All right, next, Donald Trump. Let me take a little sip of my drink. Yes, it's another, it's seltzer. I don't think I've ever done the show when it's not seltzer. Haven't gotten the care package yet, but I assume it's coming soon. How awesome was that story? People don't know what I'm talking about. Just type seltzer, type secular talk seltzer into the YouTube search box, you'll see. Of all the things, of all the companies, seltzer companies, they took a liking to secular talk. All right. The Hill is reporting on an interesting story that gives us a really important clue about Donald Trump's campaign. They say President-elect Donald Trump will take a victory tour across the states he won on Election Day in the coming weeks. His campaign said Thursday, George Gijikas, interesting name, the Trump campaign's advanced team director, said groundwork is being done for the president-elect's first trip. So what this means is he's going to continue to do rallies while he's in office. Now, this was something, there were some leaks previously where people were saying, oh, we think that's what's going to happen. We think he's going to keep doing rallies. And a lot of people were like, yeah, come on, he's not going to do that. Presidents don't do that. But apparently he wanted to. Well, now we know it's true, and he's going to go on a victory tour to do more rallies. Now, what this tells me is that some earlier stories in the campaign, now I'm totally convinced of. I was 50-50 on them before. Now I'm not 50-50. Now I totally believe it. So what story am I referring to? Well, there was a story about how Donald Trump, when he got the nomination in the primary, he approached John Kasich and his team, or his people, spoke to Kasich's people, and they said, look, here's the deal. We think Donald Trump is basically a good cheerleader for the country. We want to offer John Kasich the VP role, and we want him to basically be the president. We want him to handle all domestic affairs, all foreign affairs, the economy, everything. So would he accept that role? Would John Kasich accept that role? of being the VP who's essentially the president. Now, Kasich turned it down. He wanted nothing to do with Donald Trump. But the Trump campaign, when that story leaked, the Trump campaign was like, no, no, that didn't happen. No, no, that's not true at all. Now when I hear this, I go, oh, no, it did happen. Because in that article, they say, this was the first time you heard this line of thinking, that, well, what Trump really wants to do is he wants to go around, as Kasich runs the country, Trump wants to go around the country and do rallies and get people riled up and ready to make America great again and do his little cheerleader thing. Well, that's exactly what he's actually going to do now that he got elected. So there was another article, too, which spoke about how there were people who were in the campaign, in Donald Trump's campaign, early on, and some of them left. And one person wrote a piece online saying, look, I was in the Trump campaign. I had kind of worked my way up to a pretty high position. And I can tell you they do not expect this success, and they do not expect to win. This was written, I think, maybe a little after he got the nomination or just before he got the nomination for the Republican Party. And this person's like, it's all a surprise to them. It's all a surprise. Trump wanted to go in there, you know, make a run here, you know, kind of like whatever Michelle Bachmann or Herman Cain did the last time around, up his brand. And they even go as far in one of the pieces to say to get a better position in his negotiation for his reality show because the contract was up. So he wanted to, you know, lift the Trump brand even more. So him leading in the polls, winning the debates, and then eventually actually winning primaries and caucuses, they were like, he didn't really expect this. They didn't expect this. They're not nearly as organized as the other candidates. They really don't know what they're doing. He's kind of shooting from the hip, and he just keeps going up in the polls. They did this in the South Park episode recently, where Mr. Garrison is Donald Trump. And he's just like, it doesn't matter what I say. I keep going up the polls. I don't understand. This is insanity. And there were times where it looked like Trump was actually trying to throw the fucking campaign. You remember the whole time in the general election when he was going around saying Obama founded ISIS? And he just kept repeating it? To the point where even Hugh Hewitt, a conservative radio host, tried to, like, soften the blow and pitch him a softball. And he was like, well, Don, I get what you're saying. You're trying to say that, you know, he created the vacuum, and then out of the vacuum rose ISIS, but he didn't found it. And Trump's like, no, he founded it. Founded. Founder. He's the founder. So I entertained the thoughts for a second, like, no, maybe he really is trying to throw this thing. Now, I think at the end, or during the general election at some point, he was so close that he could smell the office, and he's like, you know what? Fuck it. Let's go for it. But I don't deny the reports from the people who were in the campaign who were like, dude, they were surprised. They didn't expect to get this far. He didn't expect to win. There's been multiple accounts of this. People within the campaign who have left have came out and said it. They said, that's why I left the campaign. That's why I left the campaign. He's not the guy I thought he was. And also, he's not expecting to win. And now, that mixed with the John Kasich story, mixed now with hearing that he wants to do a victory tour. I'm convinced, man. He's in way over his head. I mean, he's in over his head even if he wanted it from the beginning. But he ain't ready for this. And they say, the whole idea of continuing to do rallies, some people are blown out of proportion. They say, oh, you know, that proves he's like Hitler because that's what, you know, if you're already elected and you do rallies, who does that? Fascists. Hitler does that. But to me, what it tells me is he's exactly who you think he is in terms of gratification. So he's like an empty shell of a human, and he looks for validation everywhere. And the instant validation that you get from a rally is one of those things that makes him feel good, one of the few things that makes him feel good. So that's why he loves it, and that's why he wants to keep doing it. And that's another reason why he ended up beating Hillary Clinton, is that he did way more rallies and campaign events than she did, and they even said that, like, she didn't step foot in Wisconsin. And that's insane. She needed to fucking campaign in Wisconsin. She ended up losing Wisconsin. This was part of the Democratic firewall. She didn't even fucking campaign there. Trump was doing events everywhere. He would do, you know, multiple speeches in a day and travel all over the place and just nonstop. So he flat out outworked her. How was he able to do that? Because that's what he loves to do. He loves to talk in front of the crowds. He loves to get the cheers. He loves to have that wash over him. That's his drug. So hearing that he's going to do a victory tour, which is not a thing, but now he's making it a thing, not surprising, and it kind of validates the other stories in my mind. Just certainly the Kasich story. Hey, if he wins, you know, you interested in basically being president? I believe that. And now, you know, he might. That's why he might be falling back on. He's mixing his administration up with lobbyists and corporate insiders and people who are part of the establishment and some actual right-wing Kool-Aid drinkers like Steve Bannon. He's trying to mix his administration up. My guess is he's really going to let them kind of take the reins, or let somebody take the reins, because this shows yet again he's more interested in the campaigning aspect and the adulation aspect and the title President of the United States than anything else. All right, let me take a quick break. When we come back, a new poll to discuss here about what the American people want Trump to focus on. And is he already caving on his populist promises? Well, one thing he's doing is basically the total and utter opposite of populism. Stay right there. We'll be right back.
I can't live without you. I can't live without you. I can't live without you.
What's up, bitch? All right, let's do it. Still got a hell of a lot more. And a lot of important stories. Okay. I still can't get over it. I look ridiculous. I look like Phantom of the Opera because one of my sides of my face is like fucking shadowy because of light blue. Anyway. So we have a new poll to discuss here. Newsweek explains, some 21% of Americans want Trump to focus on the healthcare system when he enters the White House on January 20th, according to a new Reuters Ipsos poll conducted in the week after the Republican won the U.S. presidential election. Jobs took second place with 16% of Americans hoping it would be Trump's first agenda item, while immigration came third, picked by 14% of Americans. So the number one thing was healthcare. People saying, yeah, focus on that before you focus on anything else. Oh, no. So there's a few things to say about this. First of all, if you think Donald Trump's healthcare ideas are going to help you in your life in any way, you are dead wrong. I mean, I remember we covered the story during the debate when they spoke about healthcare. He just had no clue what the fuck he was talking about. Like, the only concrete answer he gave is what he would do, repeal Obamacare, and then he would replace it with just getting rid of the state lines for insurance companies. Now, they frame that as if it'd be this great thing that helps the people. That doesn't do that in any way. All it does is it allows the health insurance companies, just like is the case in other industries, they go to the state that gives them the lowest tax rate, and they make more money. That's all it does. Getting rid of the lines around the states for the health insurance companies just will make them all go to one state, and they'll offer insurance everywhere around the country, but they'll just make it so they pay the lowest tax rate. That's a guarantee. That's all that does. So he wants to repeal Obamacare, replace it with getting rid of the lines around the states, which is the classic right-wing idea that was always preposterous, and then that's it. He's got nothing else. And then you ask him to dig deeper, and he says stuff like, well, you know, maybe we expand Medicaid. Hey, Don, that's part of Obamacare. So he said, let's repeal Obamacare and replace it with Obamacare. He doesn't know. He doesn't know what's in Obamacare. He has no clue how it works. And, in fact, there was another story that we covered after the debate where he was doing a rally and he was talking about health care. And he said, in the time span of like 2 minutes, he argued, I do great for my employees. I get them health care. They all have health insurance. That's what it is. And then he said a couple minutes later, all my employees who are on Obamacare, it's terrible. They hate it. Wait, which is it? It's one or the other. It's impossible for them to have, you provide them with their health insurance or they go through Obamacare for their health insurance. It's got to be one or the other. Because the way it will work is, as the business owner, you make a commercial insurance deal and it covers them. That's not Obamacare. So what are you saying? He doesn't know how it works. He's got no clue. He's fucking just immensely ignorant on the topic. People thinking like, oh, no, he's got this shit for healthcare. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't. And you made a terrible mistake if you think that he's going to help you out in that respect. If anything, if he goes after healthcare to do something for it, you know what he's going to do? He's going to call in all the insurance companies, and they'll say, we're the experts, and he'll say, okay, so you fix it. And then they'll just find a way to keep ripping you off. He's not going to cut your prices or anything like that. Don't be ridiculous. So he'll fuck it up. It'll be worse than Obamacare. But then there's another aspect to this, too. The fact that the number one thing that people said they want Trump to go after is health care, that further in my mind leads me to the conclusion that the Democrats had to do single payer. Because anything short of single payer, and it looks like it was destined to crumble. I mean, they tried to repeal Obamacare 60 times, the Republicans did. The Democrats were able to block it because they had the numbers to block it. When you have a Republican House, a Republican Senate, and a Republican president, Obamacare is just on the chopping block, bitch. So it's like you're only temporarily fighting off them taking a sledgehammer to it. But here's the thing. If you did single payer, they wouldn't have been able to touch it. Now, a lot of people go, what are you talking about? Of course they would, Kyle. What are you saying? No, because the same thing would have happened with single payer as happened in this country with Medicare and Medicaid. So if you try to go after Medicare and Medicaid, and they do, they still try to cut it and might try to privatize it and all that stuff. But every time they do that, there's not only a political backlash from the left wing in the country, it's also from the right wing. Everybody's like, whoa, don't touch that. And remember the signs during the Tea Party rallies, keep your government hands off my Medicare? Because they don't even know how it works. But the bottom line is those programs are the most popular programs out of everything the U.S. government does, Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, because they work and because they're great and because, the care costs less, the drugs cost less, and you get good care. So it costs less and people are covered. I mean, that's single payer. A Medicare for all system is what a single payer system is. So if you did single payer, people would be paying less for their health care and they'd be getting better health care and you'd be covering more people. There's no, like, that's the answer. So if you did that, people would say, yeah, we're against them. Actually, this is kind of great. Now I'm not getting price gouged by these fucking asshole, unnecessary, rapacious, for-profit health insurance middlemen. So the program would have been so popular that they can't touch it without just getting fucking wiped out in the next election. With Obamacare, it was a half measure. And even if they mangle that, people will be worse off, but who knows if there'll be a wave against them in the next election. So they had the numbers. They had a supermajority. The Democrats had a supermajority. They could have done single payer. Now, this is where a lot of partisan Democrats will say, that's not true. There were the blue dogs, and they were blocking it. That just shows that you have no clue how to play politics. Now, at the time, Obama was really popular when he was doing this. So you know what you do if you're Obama? You call the blue dogs into your office and you say, if you don't vote for this, your career is over. Because I will personally go and campaign, we'll primary you, and I will campaign against you. And whoever is the Democrat who's trying to take your place, I will guarantee that they win. I'll pump, Democratic funds into that campaign, and we'll just destroy you. So are you going to vote for this piece of legislation or not? You play politics. You threaten the blue dogs with their political career. They would have fallen in line. They would have done it. They were on the fence anyway. I mean, even the ones who came out against it, they were like, well, I am a Democrat, and I'm going against the Democratic president. I'm not sure if I like this. You know, crack some skulls, son. That's how politics is played. So you could have gotten single payer, but you didn't. At the very least, you could have gotten a public option, but you didn't. You got Obamacare, which was originally a right-wing proposal. Now it's not doing as well as it should be doing, and now the right-wingers are going to come in and do an even further right-wing idea and fuck it up even more. So we're in a bad place for healthcare, and it's all these people who say, oh, I want President Trump to address this, they're suckers because he ain't going to fix it. Okay. All right, let's go to Donald Trump caving on some of his populist promises. Donald Trump is already caving on his populist promises. We have a really sad example of that here. Ryan Grimm explains, Senate Republicans are gearing up for an assault on one of the trademark populist achievements of the Obama administration, vowing to take on the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. The agency, the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren, back when she was a law professor, was enacted as part of the 2010 Wall Street Reform Bill. Since then, it has returned nearly $12 billion to 27 million consumers who've been victims of one predatory scam or another. More than 1 million consumer complaints have been filed with this agency. Targeting the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau would seem to be a strange move under President-elect Donald Trump, a populist who won the White House on the back of deep economic anxiety, promising to break the hold the rich and powerful have on Washington. Okay, so let me be very clear in how we break this story down. The Consumer Financial Protection Bureau is maybe the best thing the United States government has done in a decade. I have zero beef with it. It's great. It's done amazing things. So they give you the fact here. They say, Since 2010, it has returned nearly $12 billion to 27 million customers who'd been victims of one predatory scam or another. So they are watchdogs for the consumers to make sure that the financial industry doesn't rip them off. It doesn't get any better than that in terms of, you know, government regulation, government watchdogs actually looking after the powerful to make sure they don't screw over the powerless. I mean, that's exactly what this is. Now, Obama, they're giving Obama credit for it. They really shouldn't. Obama was dragged to that position by people to the left of him who forced him there, namely Elizabeth Warren. And this is why when everybody was going after Elizabeth Warren and they were mad at her for, you know, after Hillary effectively won the primary for endorsing Hillary, people were mad at her. I said, look, I can't go on board with you calling Elizabeth Warren a sellout because she has a track record of doing amazing things. This is one of them. She created the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. She thought of it, and she pushed Obama and forced him to accept it. And it is an amazing, amazing, amazing thing. Now, I even have personal experience with it. So there was one night I was out in the city with my friends for somebody's birthday, and I was fucking hammered. And I think I lost my card. And the next morning I had to call and cancel it, and I was fucking still like drunk or slash hungover, just felt horrendous. So I'm talking to the person from the credit card company, and they go, oh, okay, well, to make sure that you don't have any future problems and we can address this in a better way, would you like identity theft protection? You know, half drunk slash hungover me was like, of course, yes. How much? It was something like $5 a month or something like that. Well, turns out that's just a scam. It wasn't just that credit card company. It was a bunch of credit card companies were running a scam where they pitch you identity theft protection, and they don't do anything. There's nothing set up to actually protect your identity if something were to happen. It's just they want to collect extra money from you for nothing. So come to find out, however many years later, I get in the mail, a message from the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. You were the victim of this scam, yada, yada, and then they forced the credit card company to send me a check to refund all my money. The Republicans want to fucking get rid of this. They want to get rid of it. One of the very few things we could look at the U.S. government and go, you're doing something good. This is correct. Good job. Great job. Basic regulation of the marketplace. You know, making sure the financial industry doesn't rip off unsuspecting people who didn't see it coming. It doesn't get any better than that. The Republicans are like, let's get rid of that. And Donald Trump's running on he ran on a fucking populist campaign. And they're like, whatever. Us Republicans want to get rid of it. You don't think Donald Trump would sign a repeal of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau? Look, if he doesn't, I'll come out here and I'll give him so much credit. I'll do a segment of fawning praise for President Donald Trump. I will. If he says, no, we're not getting rid of that, that's a great thing. We'll see. But the Republicans are going for it, and they're not even hiding that they're going for it. And by the way, Democrats, where are you? Like, this is an issue where if the roles were reversed, if the Republicans had did something good and the Democrats were like, we're going to take a sledgehammer to that, the Republicans would be on every show in the media going, these insane fascists want to make your life worse. I can't believe how loathsome they are. Look at what they're doing. Look at what they're doing. But when the Republicans go to take a sledgehammer to something good that the Democrats created, I haven't heard a single fucking Democrat talk about this. Not a single one has brought this up. They're plotting on how to fucking defeat Donald Trump in 4 years and how to rebuild the party, and they're literally having backroom meetings with billionaires. You want to know how to rebuild the party? Stop taking the corporate money. Go out there and argue for good things, even good things you have done. Go out there and say, this has $12 billion have been returned to 27 million customers who were scammed. We did a great thing here, and now the Republicans are trying to ruin it because, look, I agree, you agree, the Democrats are sellouts. Guess who are, by and large, bigger sellouts? The Republicans, and they prove it every step of the way. That's why they're trying to get rid of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. There's never been a bigger sellout action to Wall Street, to the financial institutions, to the big banks. Let's get rid of this agency, which has done great things for the people. Populist my ass cheeks. Democrats, stand up and fight. Defend the legacy on the things that where it deserves to be defended. This isn't rocket science. But no, they don't even know how to fight when they have a royal flush right now. They're playing poker. They have a hand you cannot beat. And they're like, there's nothing to say. Yeah, nothing to say. They're not out there fighting, and it looks like this is on the fucking chopping block. One of the best things the government has done in modern times, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, it's on the fucking chopping block now because of weak-ass Democrats and corrupt Republicans. We're fucking relying on President Donald Trump to come through and maybe not be, you know, as shitty as we fear he is going to be. Do you want to actually be a populist, Donald Trump? Don't attack the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. If you let this get knocked down, ooh, we're coming after you with fury. With fury. But if you make sure it stays intact and it can keep doing its job, we'll defend you. Okay. All right, let me do one more, then we'll take our final break here. Do 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 do. So John Bolton is a top candidate to be Trump's Secretary of State, and he's taking this opportunity to remind everybody what he's about. So he went on a SiriusXM radio show yesterday, and he said this: only long-term solution is regime change in Tehran. The Ayatollahs are the principal threat to international peace and security in the Middle East. Wow. So I told you guys, I said it the other day, some people disagreed with me, but they're wrong. I said, John Bolton makes Dick Cheney look like Noam Chomsky. Because John Bolton has never met a war he didn't love. To this day, well, Dick Cheney defends it too, but to this day, John Bolton says the Iraq War was the right thing to do. There's no argument. There's not even a fucking philosophical, theoretical argument that if you ignore the evidence, there's not even a fucking philosophical, theoretical argument for it anymore. Never mind an empirical one based on what's actually happened. There's no argument. Oh, Iraq was good. What? What are you saying? So he believes that. He still believes he thinks Obama is way too weak. Obama, who's 7 different countries he's intervened in. We got drone strikes happening in places. We got traditional airstrikes happening in places. We got special ops boots on the ground in some places. We got an all-out standard hot war in some places. We're talking Afghanistan. We're talking Iraq. We're talking Syria. We're talking Yemen, Pakistan, Somalia. The list goes on and on. All the places that were involved. He's like, you are a weak bitch. You're a pussy. Look, the minimum to be taken seriously around these parts is like, I don't know, say 12 interventions. If you've got 12 going on, maybe you're in the ballpark. In the midst of all these interventions, he's like, let's go to Iran. Let's do regime change in Iran. I mean, this guy's so crazy. Like, with Cheney, he understood, well, you got to, like, build up to the war and do a propaganda onslaught. Bolton's like, yeah, I don't care. Just attack Iran right now. What? Like, what if the people don't want it? American people, piss off, fuck you. We're going to steal your money via taxes and then use it to topple countries and destabilize the region further. And that's the hilarious part about it. He's lecturing about, yeah, you know, Iran destabilizing the Middle East. They're destabilizing so much. Oh, are they really? What about you? This is a chief architect of the Iraq War, bungled it 9,000 ways. What about you, big guy? You have destabilized the Middle East. I mean, that was one of the biggest things in destabilizing the Middle East was the Iraq War. And furthermore, seriously, blaming Iran for that? Okay, first of all, for those of you who don't know the ins and outs and the details of, you know, the different countries in the Middle East, Iran is a Shia Islamist theocracy. Now, that's horrific. It's also significantly more modern and enlightened than, say, Saudi Arabia. Saudi Arabia is a Salafi state, a Wahhabi state. I mean, they're even more repressive. As oppressive as Iran is, and they're very oppressive, they're positively enlightened compared to Saudi Arabia. But Saudi's our ally, Iran isn't, so, oh my God, let's, you know, talk about how evil Iran is. And then furthermore, there's way fewer Shia in the Middle East than Sunni. And Iran is a Shia nation. So this idea that, like, this minority in the Middle East, which is, by the way, under threat, the Shias are under threat, like, everywhere. they got Israel on one side, and we know how Israel feels about territorial sovereignty. You know, ask people in Lebanon how they feel about that. You got Israel on one side. You got the Wahhabis on another side. I mean, they're fucking constantly under threat. And he's framing it like, ah, the Shias, the fucking Iran, oh, they're so bad and they're terrible and they destabilize the Middle East. I mean, for fuck's sake, man, what about what we've done in the Middle East, which has very clearly destabilized it? What about Israel occupying Palestinian territory and expanding further and further and further and doing a bomb fest in Gaza every few years just to cut the grass, as they say? What about Saudi Arabia? What about Qatar? I mean, these are people, they are funneling money and weapons to Al-Qaeda in Yemen and to jihadist rebels in Syria to topple the Assad regime. Okay, how about them destabilizing the Middle East? They are funding jihadists all around the world! And he's like, fucking Iran. Iran is destabilizing the Middle East, let me tell you right now. And again, I want to be clear, I'm not a fan of the Iranian government. You have to understand that the people of Iran are much younger on average and much more secular on average than their dinosaur-ass government. That's another aspect of this that's super important. So the guy has no clue what he's talking about. He's a fucking moron. He's been wrong every step of the way, and now he might be Secretary of State. Guys, I'm telling you right now, if John Bolton becomes Secretary of State, everything Donald Trump said about non-intervention during the campaign trail, when he was on the campaign trail, it's just rhetoric. That's all it was. But I'm going to go further than that. Not if he's Secretary of State. If John Bolton has any position in the administration, advisor role or otherwise, Trump didn't mean a goddamn word about stopping U.S. empire. So I'm letting you know in advance, that's the test. That's the measure. If John Bolton is part of the administration in any way, forget it. He didn't mean any of it. Now, if he's not, if Trump doesn't pick him for anything, then we'll have to see what he does, because then there's a decent chance he might actually say, you know what, fuck the neocons and take a different approach. Yet to be seen, but just the fact that his name is floated is very scary. Okay, quick break when we come back. Obama, final trip abroad as president, and we'll talk about his speech. And story here that infuriates me about the Flint water crisis. Don't go anywhere.
Yeah.
Ooh, wee, baby, oh.
like water falls your hair flows down to your waist. Can I get a taste, girl? No need to keep, cause baby I ain't ashamed of calling your name, girl.
Bitch. All right, we're back. Obama did his final trip abroad as president. He spoke in Greece, and he warned against the rise of nationalism as a response to globalization.
If people feel that they're losing control of their future, they will push back. We have seen it here in Greece, we've seen it across Europe, we've seen it in the United States, we saw it in the vote in Britain to leave the EU. Faced with this new reality where cultures clash, it's inevitable that some will seek a comfort in nationalism or tribe or ethnicity or sect in a world of widening inequality. There's a growing suspicion or even disdain for elites and institutions that seem remote from the daily lives of ordinary people. So just as we have to have an inclusive economic strategy, we have to have an inclusive political and cultural strategy. In all of our capitals, we have to keep making government more open, more efficient, more effective in responding to the daily needs of citizens. I believe that by virtue of the progress it has delivered over the decades, the stability it has provided, the security it's reinforced, that European integration and the European Union remains one of the great political and economic achievements of human history.
Okay, there's a lot to unpack there. So, first of all, he says, okay, it's not a good response to become more nationalistic and more tribalistic as a response to rising inequality. Now, that's true, you know, that increases in economic inequality, that doesn't mean that you should start to scapegoat and be more xenophobic and fear the other and lash out against people who are less powerful than you. That's totally true. But there's a problem with what he's saying, which is, for him to make that case, but then turn around and argue for the TPP, for example, he's making that problem worse, whether or not he understands it or realizes it. Because even though it is true you shouldn't become, you know, overtly nationalistic and tribalistic as a backlash to economic inequality, it happens. It happens whether or not you give flowery speeches against it or not. And you are viewed as one of those elites that is kind of disconnected and kind of within your Washington bubble. And when you argue for the TPP, that unquestionably will increase economic inequality further, ship out more U.S. jobs, you know, make the population in the U.S. more angry, more pissed off at elites, and they would become even more tribalistic and more nationalistic and xenophobic. Now, and actually, you know what? That's not even a totally fair comment, because it's not like the xenophobia and the bigotry has gotten worse recently. It's that before it was latent, and now it's coming to the surface because a lot of people need an answer for who to blame for their shitty situation, and they're going to take it out on minority communities. Now, they're wrong to do that. That economic anxiety, though, is real and based in fact. It's like what Noam Chomsky always said about the Tea Party. He's like, yeah, we can mock them and make fun of them for being ridiculous people and, you know, holding signs, keep your government hands off my Medicare and stuff like that. But understand that the pain that they feel is real. They're just channeling it in the wrong direction. That doesn't excuse the direction they channel it in, where they go to bigotry and scapegoating and they want to blame people who are even more vulnerable than they are. That doesn't excuse it, but it explains it. So what do? Well, you got to address the income inequality. If you address the economic inequality, guess what happens? It's not like you eliminate sexism and racism and bigotry and xenophobia. You don't eliminate it, but it drops big time because it's harder to be a super douche to your neighbors who might not be of the same ethnic background as you if you're doing well financially. Now, again, I want to be clear. Some of the, you know, Trump support from the KKK, from fucking Stormfront, from white nationalists, white supremacists, neo-Confederates, some of it is, like, it's obvious that it's ideological first, that it is more about, no, yes, we are racist, and that's our identity, and that's what we want to do, is we want to crack down on the minorities. So some of it, it doesn't matter how much of the economic situation you fix, there's still going to be that group of people who really are just, yes, deplorable. But for a lot of Trump supporters, they didn't vote for him because, you know, he's a bigot, and because he's going around saying, ban all Muslims, and kick out all undocumented immigrants, and Mexicans, they're rapists, let's crack down, we need law and order, let's do nationwide stop and frisk, which would unquestionably take away the rights of black people, and the entire community would be cracked down on, even if they're innocent, and they did nothing wrong, and there's no reason to think they did anything wrong. So, and they don't have Fourth Amendment rights if you go down that path. But point is, for Obama to say this and then push for the TPP, whether or not he realized it, he's making the problem worse. So, you know, you're your own worst enemy, Obama, because you're out there saying, no, don't turn to bigotry and xenophobia because of rising inequality. But you're going to exacerbate the rising inequality if you do TPP. Now, he might take issue with me on that and argue with me on that, but he's wrong. I mean, I'm the one that at the Economic Policy Institute looked into it. They know that there's going to be more outsourcing as a result of this. Every free trade deal so far was just an outsourcing deal and a race to the bottom, and it shipped out decent-paying U.S. manufacturing jobs. So he could argue with me on that, but he's wrong. So you're going to exacerbate that economic income inequality and then turn around and yell at people and say, well, why are you scapegoating minorities? Well, I agree they shouldn't be scapegoating minorities, but you shouldn't have passed TPP to fuck up their life further, to put them in a position where they want to scapegoat somebody. So there's blame to go around everywhere here, but, you know, it's a super disconnected thing for Obama to say. Because, and even the thing about the EU, like, oh, the EU has been a massive success. Well, obviously not, because a lot of people are miserable under the system, and it's left a lot of people behind. You know, somebody explained the EU to me. I forget who it was, but they said one of the purposes of the EU was to compete with China to be the next powerhouse. So the idea was for the corporations to drive down wages to compete with China and how low their fucking wages are, and make it so that there's an actual competition going on between, you know, China and the West. And if you do the EU, then it makes it so that you can basically outsource jobs to the lower wage countries within the EU and basically force them to do the grunt work and do the bitch work. So that's kind of the same thing that happened with NAFTA and the same, take all the decent paying U.S. jobs and ship them to Mexico, and then the corporations will be more competitive on the global market. But how many lives did you destroy in the process? They don't care about that aspect of it. They just want to compete globally. Yes, the world is a chessboard, and, you know, our corporations need to do better than their corporations and then their government. And so that's what they do. They say that's the calculation. The calculation is more profit for the corporations who, by the way, have bought the government. And that's why you see so many shitty fucking deals and trade deals and aspects of, whether it be NAFTA, whether it be CAFTA, whether it be permanent normal trade relations with China, whether it be, in the case of the EU, some of the deals that they have going on. So it's not sufficient to just dismiss everybody who was in favor of Brexit, for example. Oh, you're just all racist, xenophobic. But that's not true. Some of them, yes. Some of them, no. But they don't want to look into the nuances and the finer points of it, because then they might have to look in the mirror and go, you know, we did a lot of bad things here too. We drove down wages. We screwed over people's lives. And now they're doing anything and can to get back at us, including Brexit, including, you know, electing Donald Trump here in the U.S. Even if it's not the right answer, this is where they're turning. Okay. All right, next story here that absolutely infuriates me. I have a story here that is just absolutely infuriating. You know how Flint, Michigan is having a clean water crisis? Well, listen to what's going on there now. Huffington Post explains here. Michigan is fighting a judge's order to deliver water to Flint residents who do not have safe drinking water, claiming it would be overly expensive for taxpayers and require a, quote, Herculean effort. Last week, U.S. District Judge David Lawson ordered the state to deliver 4 cases of bottled water to each resident who needs it in the wake of the ongoing crisis that has left the city with lead-contaminated water since 2014. Attorneys for the state filed a motion Thursday to stay the order while they appeal the decision in a lawsuit brought by several advocacy groups. Quote, the Herculean effort required by the court order would be on the magnitude of a large-scale military operation, the spokeswoman for Governor Rick Snyder wrote in a statement emailed to the Huffington Post. The resources to accomplish this would only be available through the activation of the National Guard or the hiring of several logistics companies. The state's motion says it would cost at least $10.5 million monthly to deliver the estimated 400,000 cases of water each week, and warns that using Flint relief money for water delivery could defund other efforts like nutritional assistance program for kids. Okay, let me be clear about this. No. Another thing you could do is stop giving gigantic tax cuts to the rich, as Governor Rick Snyder did in Michigan. Like, oh, what are we going to do? It's either clean water for our residents or nutritional assistance programs for kids. Really? You're going to make that argument in the United States of America. That's the point you're going to make. Hey, you pick. You want your kid to eat or you want people to have clean water? Your choice. Excuse you? You're a state government in the United States of America, and you're going to say that with a straight face? The fuck do you think you're doing? What do you think, we're in Burundi? What a sad, sad state of affairs this is, man. Look, they argue. They're like, well, look, we can't do it. It'd be really hard. Okay, I don't care if it's fucking hard. People in the United States of America need clean water. It'd be really hard. We need, like, to mobilize the National Guard or hire logistics companies. Then mobilize the National Guard and hire logistics companies. Where's the fucking question here? A judge said, hey, are you stupid? If there are people in Michigan who still don't have clean water, which there are, well, you need to deliver. The state is responsible for delivering them clean water. You have to do it because clean water is a right. They go, I don't know, it's kind of hard. And they say, oh, it costs $10.5 million a week. Are you fucking kidding me? Seriously? And how much money did you give in tax breaks in the state of Michigan to corporations? Way more than that. You're probably cutting rich people's taxes left and right. Now, furthermore, Obama, where are you? I mean, you want to talk about, you know, activating FEMA, for example, having the government, the federal government, step in. $10.5 million a week, you can't swing that. You want to try a national poll and ask the American people, hey, what percentage of you are in favor of getting clean water to residents in Michigan who don't have it? I'm guessing it'd be upwards of 98% of people would say, of course, where's the question? Are you stupid? Most Democrats, most Republicans, most independents, yes, give them fucking water. They're in the United States of America. They don't have clean water. What are you, crazy? You can't afford $10.5 million a week. Where the fuck did you get $2 trillion to build a military jet that doesn't even fly? Where'd you get it? The next generation F-35, which has been a disaster. Where'd you get the $6 trillion for the war in Iraq? How about that? Where'd you get that money from? How about the fact that Wall Street gets $80 billion a month? Quantitative easing for the big banks, $80 billion. So we got corporate welfare out the wazoo. We got pork barrel spending out the wazoo. We got the military-industrial complex. Over 50% of our discretionary spending goes to the military. We got all these ways that we unnecessarily spend. ExxonMobil gets a $4 billion subsidy every year for research and development. They're one of the most profitable corporations on the planet, and they're getting taxpayer money. Why? Research and development. No, they could do their own research and development. I think being one of the most profitable corporations is enough of an incentive to do their own goddamn research and development. Nope, all that money, they need it. People, clean water in Flint, Michigan. They don't have it. The government's like, I don't know. That seems kind of low on the priority list, doesn't it? Fuck you, Governor Rick Snyder. Fuck you. You're a loathsome human being. You should resign right now. And your goddamn spokeswoman, too, who had the nerve to go out there and say, yeah, no, it's hard to do, so I don't know. Clean water in the United States of America. That's the debate we're having right now. And the government's like, yeah, we should just abandon them. I mean, it'd be hard. We have to get the National Guard. It costs a lot of money. We need logistics companies. You already should have been doing this all along. There shouldn't be a question. There should, and they say, well, look, a lot of the people already have filters. And what about people who don't have the filters? Either get a filter, install it for them, fix the fucking water, fix the broader problem, or deliver the bottles and shut the fuck up. When I read stories like this, I think we got to rebuild from the ground up. Every level of our government is broken. Every level. The Democratic Party is a weak corporate shell of its former self. The Republican Party is still as insane as it's always been, with religious fundamentalists and corporate sellouts in their own right. So we have the Republicans controlling state legislatures, governorships. They have the majority of those in the country. They have the House of Representatives, they have the Senate, and they have the presidency. And here's, this is a Republican governor for you, Rick Snyder, and look what he's doing. Clean water? Eh, maybe not. It's hard. I got to hire people. Don't think I want to do it. Even when the court's like, you're doing it. They're like, yeah, how about I appeal that? This is fucking criminal, is what it is. This is criminal. These people should be in jail. We just covered the story the other day. There was a sinkhole in Japan. In the middle of a city, a giant sinkhole opened up. Giant, out of nowhere. Just boom, the earth fell in on itself. You know what happened? They fixed it in like a week. They fixed it immediately. I don't even know how it's possible. I don't even know how they did it. I don't know how they figured it out logistically. I don't know how they got all the materials in there. It was fixed in a week. Flint hasn't had clean water for 2 years. It's not that you can't fix it. It's that you don't have the will to fix it because the government is too busy selling itself out to rich people. Okay. Let's go to Alan Grayson. Hey, by the way, real quick, catch me on Drunken Peasants tonight at about 9 o'clock. I've been on their show twice before, so I'll be again tonight, Drunken Peasants with TJ, the Amazing Atheist. Should be fun. Always is fun. Always have a good time when I go talk to those guys. All right, here we go, Alan Grayson. Alan Grayson came up with a great idea about the presidential election, and he proposed a bill for it. Check it out.
We Americans desperately need and deserve the right to reject all of the candidates on the ballot. Now, I realize that that's an unusual notion, but I want you to think about it, because I'm introducing a bill called the None of the Above Act, whereby if the last line of the ballot, none of the above, gets more votes than any candidate does, then none of the above actually won. I'm not talking about the Nevada version that we already have, where the none of the above vote gets ignored. I'm talking about none of the above winning and forcing a mulligan, a do-over. We make them do it over until they get it right and give us candidates who we want to vote for, someone who we feel will actually do a good job in leadership and make the country a better place.
Okay, here's how I know that's an amazing idea. I came up with it too. I was talking with my friends about this on election night, and I even tweeted about it as well at some point. And look, the argument's very simple. You can add a something on the ballot that basically says no confidence. So you can do a vote of no confidence in your government, and that would trigger a reset process, or you could label it whatever you want. It could be a reset thing you check on your ballot, or it could be a refresh thing you do, or no confidence, or whatever, mulligan, whatever you want to call it. And it basically starts a process where you extend President Obama's time in office to the current president, whoever it may be at the time, for either 6 months or a year or whatever it is, and you have a new process set up where you have new candidates, and you don't have the same length of a campaign that you originally had because that was ungodly long. But you have some sort of process set up where, you have new candidates, and then you pick from there. So, and I mean, look, if that was the case for this election, I think that's what would have happened. I think it wouldn't have been Hillary Clinton, it would have been Donald Trump. I think it would have been the no confidence, the refresh, and I think it would have been great for the country. Did you guys know in the primary, only 9% of the voters in the country picked Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton? 9%. I mean, that's abysmal. That's hilariously low. So we can avoid that. There are reforms we could do to change that. And this is a great idea. In fact, it's such a good idea, I think this would be overwhelmingly popular not only among Democrats, not only among independents, but Republicans too would be like, yeah, kind of, I like that idea. So, and who knows how many presidents would have been like, they won under the way the system worked, but it would have been a refresh if you had the option. I think it's a great idea. And it should be implemented, which is why I doubt it will be. Okay. And finally, we have Bill O'Reilly here for you. Bill O'Reilly has some surprising thoughts for Donald Trump here. This came out of left field. Check it out.
Finally, President-elect Trump should accept the Paris Treaty on climate to buy some goodwill overseas. It doesn't really amount to much anyway. Let it go.
What's going on? Did I just agree with Bill O'Reilly? What? Well, look, every now and then, as my dad used to say, even a blind squirrel finds an acorn from time to time. Or as many other people have said, even a broken clock is right twice a day. Well, that's Bill O'Reilly on this one. You know, he said stuff similar things like this in the past where you go, whoa, where'd that come from? I don't know what just happened. That seems to be actually totally reasonable. Well, there it is. He's like, climate change, pollution. I guess it could kind of be bad, maybe. So yeah, just accept it. But it's funny how even when he's right, he's a little bit wrong. Because he frames it as like, it's not much cause anyway, whatever, just do it. As opposed to like, no, seriously, we need this and we got to go further because climate change is coming and good googly moogly is going to fuck us up. So, but hey, look, I'll take an agreement where I can get it. And here's the upside of this story and actually why I'm even bothering to do this story. Donald Trump and Bill O'Reilly are friends. Like, they're friends' friends. Like, you know, they went go to basketball games. Before Trump even ran for president, they went to basketball games together. Like, they're buddies. So, for the first time ever, and probably the last time ever, you're going to hear me say, God, I wish the president listens to Bill O'Reilly. Because I hope Bill O'Reilly calls him up and he's like, look, you know how Bill talks. He's somehow more arrogant than even I am. He's like, look, this is what you're going to do. You're gonna accept the climate treaty. It doesn't cost you anything. It doesn't cost you anything. It's good. Why not? Go for it. Come on, Bill. Come on. I need you to out alpha male Donald Trump in that conversation you have with him on the phone and convince his ass that this is the right thing to do. The fucking future of the planet may depend on Bill O'Reilly talking to Donald Trump and convincing him that don't pull out of it. Don't pull out of it. What a scary thought. The future of the planet might be in Bill O'Reilly's hands. And we're fucking rooting for him. Come on, Bill. Convince him. Come on. Okay. All right, guys. I love you. We're done here. Check me out again on Drunken Peasants tonight, about 9 o'clock Eastern time. Tomorrow I'll be doing a hangout with Sargon at some point. I don't know what time that is. I'll tweet it out whenever we plan on doing it. So stay tuned for that. Sunday at some point you should have Kyle and Corin to look forward to. And then next week, Monday, the new studio. So a heaping dose of me and some exciting times ahead. All right, guys. Love you. Love you. We'll see you later. Mwah. I'm out.